I'm Charlie Wilmoth.
I'm David Todd.
And welcome to the Bucks Dugout Podcast.
Welcome to the Bucks Dugout Podcast, Episode 3. Charlie, how's it going? I'm in New York. What's up with you?
Not much. I'm just glad it's the weekend. How are you?
Good. Some breaking news. Saw you posted the article. MLB Trade Rumors, I think, was the first that we heard it from. The Pirates make a big trade here on the eve of the opening of the season. Why don't you take us through the details?
It is a blockbuster, and it's Ryota Igarashi has been traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. We don't know what the return is yet. It's probably something very significant, a potential cornerstone piece, probably, since this is a player who, if you ask him, he'll tell you he's really got it going on.
You and I both got a little bit of a chuckle yesterday. Ryota Igarashi gets told he's getting sent, getting cut, essentially, getting sent out. And his response through his translator is, quote unquote, shocked. And, you know, I've shown him everything. And, you know, basically, I've done all I can. You know, you and I both got a laugh out of that.
Right. I mean, this wasn't someone who looked like he had much of a shot to begin with. I mean, he has a very, very dicey record in the major leagues and really doesn't bring a whole lot to the table other than a pretty nifty fastball. Then he shows up in the spring, pretty much single-handedly blows at least one game and just generally doesn't pitch well at all, and he expects that he's gonna make the team. I'm actually pretty surprised that he lasted as long as he did in spring training.
Yeah, I agree. Pirates are going to get a bag of balls for this. Charlie, do you think his comments, the way he perceived things, had anything to do with them shipping him out? Or do you think this is a guy who's been a professional baseball player for whatever it's been, 10 or 12 years, had some success in Japan, and to do well by him, they moved him to a place where he might have a better chance to make a major league roster?
Well, apparently he's still not going to be making a major league roster. The Jays are still sending him to Las Vegas where they have their AAA team. It might have been partly in response to the comments, but you can't really blame him for the comments. I mean, they're kind of hilarious from our perspective, but you know him thinking so highly of himself and him having that kind of confidence in his own talents is probably one of the things that got him this far to begin with.
That's a fair point. That's a very fair point. Charlie, you and I talked about this off air. Let's just touch on this briefly. I had suggested that maybe, you know, the Pirates are going to have this roster going forward. And, you know, they didn't, on January 1st, maybe they didn't foresee A.J. Burnett being in the mix. But, and Charlie Morton's going to start on the DL. We've gone through most of that on the site. But essentially, to me, it looks like the guys we're going to go with up north are the guys that you would have penciled in basically on January 1st. Do guys have a chance to make teams out of spring training?
I would say that they, well, some guys don't. I mean, I don't think Igarashi did, for example. But maybe at the very, the smallest sort of margins of the roster, you know, the difference between, you know, the 22nd and, you know, 30th best players, those spots probably are legitimately up for grabs. But the fact is not many of them are, and a lot of guys who go into camp thinking they have a shot really don't, because ultimately, 30 games of spring training stats don't really tell us a whole lot.
Yeah, and we're going to come back to this in a second, talking about sample size and some of the stuff we've talked about earlier. But let's also touch on the Pedro Alvarez thing. We've said a lot. It's been a tremendously disappointing spring. I think a lot of people who know a lot about baseball have very different views about the two options. Should Pedro start the season in Pittsburgh, or should he go down to Indy and play down there and get his confidence back, or whatever it is, work out whatever he needs to work on? I've pretty much been on the side that he should be in Pittsburgh. I think you've taken the view that plus or minus, he should probably start in Indianapolis. It looks like he's going to be in Pittsburgh. He's the first 10 games, the Pirates play 5 tough lefties, so he may sit some of these games. But I feel comfortable in suggesting that up until June 1st, he is going to be essentially your everyday third baseman. But there's new news, and I got to tell you, this is disturbing to me. They've changed his hitting style again.
Right, and he added that toe tap in the off season, and they're now doing away with it, you know, a week before the season starts. And I agree with that. There was a comment around Buck's Dugout who said that it sounded desperate, and I kind of agree with that. And I'm not criticizing the this is not a criticism of the front office or anything like that. This may just be a time when, you know, this is a desperate time that requires a desperate measure. I'm not sure, but it seems like they're still trying to mess around with him and find something that works, and they haven't got it yet. What do you think? Does this change your idea that he should come north with the team?
I was very strongly convicted in it. I think that those are exactly the right words. I was going to say smacks of desperation. Hearing Clint say we needed to simplify things. Well, you know, Clint's the guy who encourages some of these other moves. So, you know, it's all before it was he needed a timing mechanism. He needed to go to left center field more. It does smack of desperation. And if you feel like a guy is just struggling in his 40 spring at bats, and, you know, but you see progress and you see the potential, I think you can sit comfortably. If Andrew McCutchen went 3-for-40 this spring, I'm not going to worry too much about it unless we see him overswinging or doing some of the things that you would say for Andrew McCutchen. We don't see that. But with Pedro and the consistent lack of success over the last 12 to 18 months, and then, you know, as you said, changing a style on the week before the season starts, it really does give me pause. Now, then I guess the next question is, and I don't know if there's a good answer to this, but can you learn at the major league level, and is he better hands-on with Clint Hurdle and Greg Ritchie than he would be with Dean Traynor and whoever else may be helping him in Indianapolis?
Right, and it's not just can you learn at the major league level, but can you learn what Pedro needs to learn at the major league level? It seems like, you know, a lot of major league hitters, they maybe struggle a little bit early in their careers and they have to make some adjustments and they make them. This seems to go well beyond that into, you know, he's not standing the right way at the plate. His swing is not going in the right direction. And then that seems like something that you could just as easily work out against pitchers of lesser quality.
Yep. And, you know, the answer is we're going to see. And a lot of people are going to be able to say, I told you so, one way or the other. Charlie, going back to this spring and small sample size and stuff like that, there was an article on SB Nation on the Astros website on there, which is called Crawfish Boxes, excuse me. A guy named David Coleman wrote it, and I thought it was interesting, and I just want to point our listeners to this because there's some really good factual information in there. And he talks about, and I think Vlad has pointed us to things like this on the site, where he talks about what is normalizing in terms of statistics, meaning how many of these samples do you need to get to feel like you're at a normal rate. And they go through this for batters and for pitchers, and it just jumped out at me. And we're talking really for most of the things that we're looking at as fans, pseudo sabermetricians, if you will. You really need a batter to kind of have 150 to 300 plate appearances, maybe up to 500 to get really kind of granular information. And for pitchers, it's you know, between kind of 200 to 500 batters faced. Those are big numbers.
Yeah, they certainly are, and when you couple that with all the other factors that are in play in spring training, you know, pitchers not necessarily, you know, working on their pitches more than trying to get hitters out, or the number of minor league players that are involved in those games that for higher level players to potentially beat up on. I mean, it really does underscore the fact that spring training stats, I mean, especially considering that, you know, the Pirates right now who have the most at bats have around 40, I think. It's nothing. I mean, it's really pretty much irrelevant. And so, you know, you really got to look at the prior performance record. You have to look at scouty things, like how a player might look in his at-bats, and still you might not know.
And that takes us to, again, the end of the Pirates roster and the bench. There are two guys who came in. We've seen this. We saw this last year with a couple of the guys the Pirates brought in, as Garrett Atkins being one that quickly jumps to mind. Guys who had a major league track record, but whose performance had dropped relatively dramatically before they joined the club. And we really didn't see those guys contribute last year. The two guys that jumped to mind here who just went in this latest round of cuts are Jake Fox and Nick Evans. there are some people out there who thought they'd make the club. I'll go back to my comments a few minutes ago of I think the Pirates knew who was coming north in January, more or less, and that's pretty much what we've seen. I don't have a problem with that. But what do you think of those two guys? Do you see them? Obviously, injuries are something we can't predict. But if you were going to guess yes or no, do you expect to see either of those guys in a Pirates uniform at some point this year?
Well, I hope so, but we don't – at this point, we don't – all I know about Fox's contract is that he has an out clause that allows him to go to an Asian team if he pays the Pirates a certain amount of money.
So somewhat odd, huh? But that was a little odd when you pointed that out to me.
Yeah, there's a couple other – I believe a couple other players in camp who have a similar clause. I don't know what out clauses Evans might have, and I'm not sure that's been reported anywhere. I think, you know, unlike the case with Garrett Atkins – These are just marginal players. They're not players who are obviously washed up. So I think they have the potential to help. But you know, it's funny about the thing about the bench potentially having been decided in you know January or however far back that was. I did a post in December where I said that the bench would be McLouth, McGee, McHenry, Yamaiko Navarro, and Josh Harrison. And I was shouted down, not shouted down, but I was disagreed with by a lot of people on the site who said, no, Fox or Evans are going to be there. And it turns out, sure enough, I ended up changing my mind later, but it turns out that might be the five-man bench if they decide to go with one.
I think you're on. The question is, when you look at a guy like Nick Evans, I think people, because Matt Haig has no major league experience, I think some people think he's younger than he is. But Nick Evans is in his 26-year season. Haig is in his 25 or 26-year season. Nick Evans has had 419 major league plate appearances. His numbers are okay. I expect Matt Haig and I expect Matt Haig, if he were to play, to put up numbers similar to Nick Evans, maybe with a touch more pop. Do you see that the same way, or do you have a different view on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they might be, you know, roughly similar in terms of value with the bat. Maybe Evans provides a little bit more versatility. But yeah, it's because Haig got off to such a strong start this spring, and Evans didn't really do much at all. Haig is the one it's on everybody's lips right now, and you know, Evans' situation is unclear now that he's been cut.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see with both those guys. I guess I my feeling on Jake Fox is more I was hopeful that the Pirates would have a guy who could come off the bench with some power. I don't know that we've seen anything to think that. Clearly, he has no defensive value. So, in his 40 at-bats, unfortunately, he has to maybe do what he did last spring and hit 10 home runs. And at the end of the day, that didn't really help him either. So, I don't know. I think maybe I'd like to see – think that Jake Fox tears it up in Indy and comes up for good reasons, but I also think there's just as good a chance that his major league career may be over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, he's got the power, the kind of power that's going to tantalize people, and I'm sure he's, I don't know if his major league career is over, but I think he certainly has, you know, he's certainly well beyond the stage where he, you know, was an interesting prospect with the Cubs and is now probably seen more as a sort of quad A slugger by most major league teams. And I don't know what his plans might be as far as going to Japan or someplace else, but that might not be a bad place for him.
Charlie, I think we want to. You posted something asking people for their predictions for the Pirates for the season, and I think we'll touch on that on the next podcast as we're a little closer to opening day. The roster will be finalized. We talked about the Juan Cruz situation. It looks like he has been essentially added to the 40-man, but the corresponding move either hasn't been announced. It hasn't been announced that we've seen. Maybe they know what it is, but I guess it doesn't have to be formalized until Tuesday. So we'll keep abreast of that. There was some talk of I think this is the one last interesting thing here as we go into the roster thing. We don't know if the Pirates are going to take 11 or 12 pitchers north. So right. Matt Haig will be the guy, or it'll be an extra reliever. But with the 40-man, I think there was a pretty spirited debate on the site about what to do, who you remove from the 40-man now that you've added Juan Cruz. And in my mind, I think you look at the roster, and I think this was my initial reaction was, well, Duke Welker is a guy who's really never put up particularly good stats. Vlad, again, rightly pointed out that he's shown marked improvement over the past year, but for a guy who's a little bit older, matters less for pitchers. He hasn't pitched at any upper levels in the organization, yet they felt strongly enough to add him to the 40-man. So maybe you think he's a guy who might slide through because he might slide through. But they didn't leave him free in the Rule 5. And then the counter-argument was a guy like Dan McCutchen, who I'm not a big fan of. A guy who you know exactly what it is. You may lose him, but essentially that doesn't cost you anything. Where do you come down on the 40-man if you had to make a decision based on what we know?
I don't love the idea of losing Welker, and here's why. If you look at that, okay, so his statistically his record is you know not really that much to write home about. He has certainly improved over the past couple of years, but you know it's not because of statistics. It's because you know, when the Pirates add a pitcher to their 40-man roster, and we all go, what's that pitcher doing on the 40-man roster? Oftentimes, it turns out there's a reason there. You know, Kyle McPherson was added instead of Nate Adcock last year. Not last offseason, but the offseason before. And now it turns out that McPherson is one of the better prospects in the organization, really. Chris LaRue is another example of that, somebody who didn't necessarily have a hugely impressive statistical record, but now is looking like he can be a good big league reliever if he's not one already. Another example is Ronald Belisario, who was on the Pirates 40-man roster for a while, and nobody knew why. And then the Pirates finally got rid of him, and he went to the Dodgers and contributed there. So I don't think it's about stats as you've said. You know, with relievers, you can't look at traditional aging curves the same way. Welker is somebody we know has good stuff. I would prefer to keep the guy who has good stuff. Whereas McCutchen, we've talked about him a fair amount. I mean, he is a nice player to have around. But if there's a crunch, I don't think you lose sleep about worrying him, frankly.
Yeah, I generally agree with that. And I guess the posters on the site convinced me. Well, I guess my answer is it'll be interesting to see what the Pirates think of Duke Welker, because if they let him go, then you know they took a little bit of a flyer, but they aren't convinced that he's going to be much. But if they actually take a guy, we would think a guy who has major league experience off the 40-man roster, that does tell you that they think he has more potential than maybe I had perceived at the time. So I'm looking forward to seeing that roster move and what it tells us behind that. But like I said, we'll get into the season and where we go when we're closer to the to opening day. But just let's take a couple minutes and go back and forth on a couple players. And I'm going to throw a name at you, and you can do the same to me. And just give me your thought about where they stand coming into the season and what your outlook for them is on the positives and negatives. And maybe we can go over some names. And I'll throw out the first name to you is Jose Tabata, and we've talked about this at length. We now can't decide how his last name is pronounced. I was told last year, at the end of the year, after pronouncing his name Tabata all year long, that I was doing it wrong by the Pirates PR department, that it's Tabata. So I'm just going to say, what do you think of Jose?
Jose. Actually, when I talked to Kyle Stark last year, last spring training, he said Tabata as well, and I was like, how is this possible that the Pirates farm director does not know how to say this guy's name? But we don't know.
It's the rest of us.
We're just going to call him Jose. I think Jose has already is a fairly strong base of skills. He can hit for a little bit of average. He has a pretty good approach to the plate. He's going to draw some walks. He's also fairly athletic. His problem going forward is he needs to do something about the fact that he's hitting tons of ground balls. 61% of his batted balls last year were ground balls, and among qualified batters, the only three guys who were above 57% were Derek Jeter, Ichiro, and Yunel Escobar. And so these are good players, but you know obviously they're not power hitters, and I don't know what Jose's future is really like if he can't get more balls into the air, because I don't really see, I mean he's obviously built more stockily than a Jeter or an Ichiro. I don't really see him necessarily being able to leg out singles like those guys do. Maybe he can do it now, but I don't know about 2 or 3 years from now. So he's really either got to start hitting 300 on a consistent basis to take a step forward, or he's got to start getting more balls in the air.
Interesting take. That's really good info on the ground ball stuff. I didn't realize it was that high. I think you're right. Ichiro is a unique character who's looking to do that all the time. Jeter, you know, I think we think of as a line drive hitter, but he's an older player. He's aging big time now. So, it's interesting. I do think this is a really important year for his career. We'd like to see him stay healthy, obviously. So interesting. Yeah, I like that take.
Okay, I got a player for you now. Kevin Correa.
Kevin Correa. Well, Pirates Nation is down on Kevin Correa, and I think it's gotten to the point where the pendulum has swung too negatively. We can all laugh at the fact that Kevin Correa made the All-Star team, and it just goes to show you, by the way, that players are not necessarily the right people to ask to evaluate their peers, because some of the things that we've moved past as being the defining characteristic, in this case wins, we realize is not necessarily that important. And Kevin Correa had a lot of wins at the break, and he got added to the team. Well, good for him, but he was I find it absolutely fascinating his home and road splits last year, because we started talking about this in May. And it essentially carried on throughout the season. He was a much better pitcher on the road. I would think that won't be the case this year. I'm not suggesting that Kevin Correa is even necessarily the guy who should be the fifth starter, because I think it's pretty apparent now when Morton and Burnett come back, Kevin Correa is the guy who either they're going to try to move or he's going to go to the bullpen. Well, I mean, I guess there's a point where you could outright release him. But I do think there's value there in the sense that the Pirates are less likely to go through the stretch that they did last year for basically 4 months of the season without needing an extra starter. Correa, is he above replacement? I think he's serviceable. I really do think he's a serviceable pitcher, and I think he's been beaten up too hard. I'm interested to see how his first three starts go, if he gets three starts. He's going to, I think, have to pitch like Jeff Karsten did last year when he got in the rotation. Jeff Karsten's had to be very good very quickly, because I think they wanted Lincoln to take that spot. If Correa wants any chance to pitch extended innings this year, he's going to have to be very good right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about being a little bit too hard on him. I'm certainly guilty of that for sure. I think I probably haven't been as objective about him as I could be, simply because I just don't see much of a future for players like that in the organization, which I'm sure everybody can kind of understand. I think I agree with you that the home road thing is. Probably a fluky thing. I mean, almost certainly a fluky thing, and that we probably won't see something like that this year. I think he's a replacement level player, but a guy who is a replacement level player and can basically stay in the rotation the whole year, that's somebody who has some value at least. I'll try to tone down the Correa here.
Joel Hanrahan.
All right. So Hanrahan. The best thing that Hanrahan can do for the Pirates this year is to stay healthy and get traded.
Yes.
I think that's what's gonna happen. Barring another situation, another sort of miracle team like we had last July, which isn't super likely. The best thing he can do is stay healthy and bring in a big return. He struck out 39 fewer batters this year than he did in the previous season. He also controlled his walks a lot better, but he needs to keep striking out a lot of batters, because he only allowed one homer last year, and that's very lucky, and that's not likely to happen again. So in order to keep his play at a very high level, he needs to continue striking out a lot of batters. And I think we'd both like to see him used better. I'd like to see him inch up maybe towards 80, 85 innings and be used in like high leverage situations in the seventh or eighth inning, rather than waiting for save situations and then not using him at all and then having to bring him in a blowout. After the Pirates don't have any save situations for a week.
Charlie, I couldn't agree more. If I'm going to jump up and down about one thing, it's the use of Joel Hanrahan. And now I'm a little bit conflicted because of just what you said, staying healthy and trading him. So I'm not sure I would change his usage pattern if that's on the drawing board, to get him to July and then move him. But if I were managing this team to win games,
right,
I certainly would have him much closer to a Goose Gossage role. And I wrote about this on the site a couple times. We don't see a guy throw 100 innings anymore. Joel Hanrahan was a starter. I think he's 31 now. He's fully developed guy. I'm not overly concerned about arm injuries. He got more efficient with his pitches. I think he went from about 4 pitches per batter to 3.75 this past year. He needs to pitch more than 60 innings. I would bring him in oftentimes in the 8th and 9th. And look, if that means he doesn't get a save here and there because he needs to be rested today, that's fine. I was the most shocking thing I found in my time around the Pirates last year is Clint Hurdle telling me in his office that one of the reasons he didn't use Joel Hanrahan against the middle of the Phillies lineup in the 8th inning is he hadn't talked to Joel Hanrahan about doing that up to that point in the season. I found that disappointing in two ways. One, that he hadn't had the conversation, and B, that he couldn't call on a professional to go out and do a job because he hadn't had the conversation, because the save statistic is something that people value so highly. So that's really disappointing. I do agree with you, and I don't know that I would change things now because I do hope they move Hanrahan. I think he's a valuable player. He's got such a nasty slider to go with that fastball. I just don't know why guys don't leverage this more. And like you said, have him pitch 80 innings, 90 innings instead of 60 when he might be the best player on your team right now.
Let me see if I before we go on, let me see if I get this straight. Hurdle told you that the reason he didn't bring in Hanrahan in the 8th inning of a game was not because he didn't think Hanrahan could handle it or something, but because he thought Hanrahan would say, "Why I no get saves?"
He didn't respond to what Joel would say. He said that he didn't do it because he hadn't had the conversation at that point in the season with him pitching 2 innings or maybe being used in the 8th because it was the highest leverage situation. I don't remember in that game whether he had actually pitched 2 days in a row. So if he did pitch the 8th, he wouldn't pitch the 9th. But there was a massaging of ego that he felt might need to be done. Now, this is not at all critical of Joel, because Joel may very well have said, "Hey, that's great." We don't know what Joel's response was.
Right, right.
I was just disappointed in Hurdle for, manage the team to win the game, manage the egos and the other stuff as you see fit. But winning the game is first and foremost.
Yeah, right. That's pretty silly. Okay, name for you now. Alex Presley.
Alex Presley... very interesting guy. Again, we talk about ages. Alex Presley's in his age 26 season. He actually turns 27 in July of this year. This may be Alex Presley's only season as a starter in the majors. Maybe he gets 2 seasons as a starter. Certainly some of it will be dependent on his performance this year. I got to tell you, he's a guy I really like. He's not your prototypical corner outfielder. He's a guy with gap power. He had an OPS above 800 last year, which obviously not many Pirates did. His OPS plus was 121, 465 slugging percentage. I mean, I think, every Pirate fan in the world give up their left arm to have Pedro Alvarez have a 465 slugging percentage this year. So really, I'm excited about Alex Presley. I do think there's a 30 stolen base 300, 350, 450 guy there, and that's a valuable guy. The question is, with Tabata's contract, with Jose's contract, and Marte, on the cusp of being a guy who's going to push for a starting job, Alex Presley's this is a not that every year in his career hasn't been to this point, but this is a really interesting year for him.
Yeah, if he does end up stealing 30 bases and hitting 300, 350, 450 for the entire year, opinions of his game are going to change really fast. The best case scenario here, obviously, is that he plays really well and still has to get forced into a fourth outfielder role because of Starling Marte. But even that best case scenario runs the risk of perhaps underrating him. I agree, his season coming up could be very interesting.
Okay, I'll give you, as we wrap up here, things. J-Mac.
J-Mac. The key for McDonald is to keep the walks in check. And we've talked about this a lot, how he needs to work deeper into games. He averaged less than 6 innings a start last year. He had a seven-inning game already in spring training, but then followed that up with just a disaster of a performance the other day, which might not have been so bad, except the Pirates wanted to leave him out there and get work. But he did walk five batters in the first two innings of that game. Be efficient, work deeper into games, avoid straining the bullpen, and avoid having middle relievers come in during his starts. And I think the key for that for him is for his fastball to become a better pitch. I think we would probably both agree that his fastball is potentially a pretty good pitch, but he doesn't command it that well, and he doesn't keep it down. And the result right now is that it's not a plus pitch for him. And if he can improve his command with his fastball a little bit, that would help with all of his problems, the efficiency, the walks, and keeping him out there longer.
You said it all. I'll just say his start yesterday scares the hell out of me. If James McDonald can't command his fastball, this team's in trouble. If he's a guy who's going 4 2/3 a lot of the time, and with an ERA around 5, it's going to be a problem, because again, he's a guy who, this is the year that he's going to show that he can take that step forward. Because like you said, he has dominant starter potential. And we've seen it at times, and when you see it, it's great. But right. Yeah, and I don't want to lean too heavily on one spring start, but yesterday was ugly.
Well, it was ugly, but again, it's just one spring start, and it would not have been so bad if it had happened during the regular season, because he allowed 7 runs in the fourth inning. He would have gotten pulled much earlier in the fourth inning, potentially only allowed 3 or 4, and then yeah. It's just a sort of garden variety bad start, which is not something to cheer for, obviously, but not something to freak out about either. Okay, last one for you, Neil Walker.
Okay, I think I've been pretty clear that I don't think the Pirates have any reason to extend Neil Walker. They control him forever. They control him through his prime years, which are right now. I realize he's a Pittsburgh guy. I think Neil Walker is going to be your prototypical solid average major leaguer. I think what we've seen is what we're going to get. I don't expect a lot of improvement. It'd be nice to think he's going to hit 20 home runs. I would take under on that. I think he's a 15 home run guy. I hope he can have a 340, 350 on base percentage. I'm not sure that's going to come at the end of the day. And I don't, he's not going to be the long-term answer at second base. He's 6'3". He's a bigger guy. At some point, you'd expect him to move to third or to first. Neil Walker's a nice player. Neil Walker, it's great if Neil Walker is your 6th best starting position player. It's not good when Neil Walker is your 2nd best starting position player.
Yeah. I mean, I've been wrong about Walker in his career before. I don't want to, run the risk of underrating him now, but I agree with you that he shouldn't be extended. I think that what his defense is going to be is pretty much what it is right now, in that I don't think he's ever going to be a plus defensive second baseman. Doesn't have a ton of experience at the position, doesn't really have the conventional body for the position, and might not have the lateral range in the long run. But I think he, 5 years from now, could be a third baseman who provides above average value with the glove over there, while hitting pretty well. Still a player with a significant amount of value, but more of a role player than a star.
All right, Charlie, great stuff. I think we've run just a tad over 30 minutes, so we're trying to keep these things relatively compact. Anything you want to close with before we get out of here?
Nah, we should probably stop. We've done it.
We don't want to bore them, huh?
No. This has been amazing.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for listening. As always, feel free to give us feedback on the site, or we've set up a Gmail account, which is BucksDugoutPodcast@gmail.com.
It's just BucksDugout@gmail.com. It's BucksDugout@gmail.com, right?
Okay, I'm sorry. It's BucksDugout@gmail.com. Charlie and I both have access to that account. So if that's an easier way for you to give us feedback, of course you can give us feedback on Twitter. Charlie's at BucksDugout, and I'm at DT on Pirates. We appreciate the response we've gotten so far. It's been great. And as you know, it's not only on the site, it's on iTunes. You can subscribe that way and get it downloaded. And we'll probably also try to put a link on Twitter, again, if that's an easier way for you to access the link. So thanks for the support, and we'll be back with you soon.